Accession number 10161, reel number 3.
Colonel Slater, reel 3.
Yes, there was a certain amount of that. Slashing of rubber trees, burning down schools, generally making themselves a nuisance in areas, killing oxen, and so on. But it was, personally speaking, it never happened to where I was in my particular company area. It may have been another battalion's area or in the country in another state, but we weren't, as far as I know, we were not ever involved in anything like that.
What did you see anything of pressure on the population by the guerrillas in the sense of atrocities or anything of that kind?
No, did not.
Did you have any problems with your own troops about any kind of rough handling of the local people?
No. We from the nature of what we were doing, when we came out of the jungle, even if we were on patrol and we came, had to go, we found a village or an unexpected clearing where there may be people working, we took to the jungle again, in that we didn't want to give ourselves away. So it wasn't, and when we got out of the jungle altogether, well, then we'd go back to our battalion area. So we never really came into contact with, by going through villages or whilst we were out on patrol, out on duty.
Did your troops ever say anything or do anything to indicate to you what their attitude was towards the guerrillas? Do you think they hated them or respected them or were indifferent to them or what?
I don't think they loved them. I think that they were indifferent to them, and that they were anxious to prove themselves that they were good jungle fighters and were very keen. Once they had picked up a trail, they were very keen to get on and to make a success of following up as fast as they could so that they could get a kill.
You talked about other Imperial units operating in Malaya apart from yourselves. How do you think that the 1st Battalion of the Northern Rhodesia Regiment compared with other units like British units, Gurkhas and so on, in these type of operations?
I think we compared very well. I should point out that in the time that we were there, operationally, let us say 12-15 months, our battalion got the most kills in Malaya. So that yes, I think we compared extremely well with the Gurkhas and the Imperial troops that were there.
Do I understand it that you didn't actually live in the jungle yourself?
Oh, we lived in the jungle.
I mean, you personally?
Oh, yes. Every time the company went in, the whole company went in, except for probably the storeman left back at base camp, battalion camp. The whole company went in. And my company, a platoon commanded by Sandy McLean, stayed in the jungle, the longest unit in the battalion.
How long was that for?
Oh dear, you're asking me a question now. I can't give you an exact figure, but it was certainly the record-breaking figure for the unit.
But would it be days or weeks or what?
Oh, in round figures, I suppose, out of 15 months, I suppose it could well have been 10 months. something like that, a total in all of staying in the jungle. We when we arrived there, we were saw that the other units, I'm not talking about the Malays, I'm talking about the British units, would go on patrol 7 to 10 days. The length of our patrols, company patrols and platoon patrols, would be anything up to 6 to 7 weeks. We would take in as much as we could on our backs by opening the rations and getting rid of the boxes, because that's all weight. We'd split it down, we'd break down it into just the tins and select the tins we wanted. And that would last us, say, 7 days, 10 days. And we would then get an air supply drop from the RAF for another 10 days. And on this Operation Rooster, which B and C companies went on, we did a total of 7 weeks in the jungle.
What was the object of these various operations? Why was the work divided up into operations?
Well, I think that was higher policy, if you like, in that there was a limited amount of troops, a vast area in which to cover the countryside, and once one had been, say, in a certain area for 2 or 3 months, you'd swap the area with troops. You'd been there on patrol all the time. The local CTs got the feel of it. They couldn't move. You brought that particular area under a sort of control, and you would then be taken away and put into another area where perhaps it was bubbling up a bit, and you would go in there and stay there for 2 or 3 weeks, trying to keep the CTs on the move, make them aware that they are that the troops were in the jungle and not just in for a few days and out again.
What were the discomforts of living in the jungle?
The main discomfort was the wetness. You would get wet through sweat. You would get wet through rain. You would be up to your ankles, your waist, your chest, crossing the muddy streams that you came across in the jungle, and you couldn't go round them, you had to go through them. And you lived on what you could carry, and everybody carried a spare, dry set of clothing. And once you got back to the base camp, you were always within 100 or 200 yards of a stream. Once you got back to the base camp, you would go down under guard as well. We'd take your rifles and post your sentries. We would have a wash or bath in the lovely, clear, cool water, and then you would then put on your dry clothing and have, 9 times out of 10, a fairly comfortable night. I don't think that food came into it in a great extent. Once you're in the jungle and bashing about, you didn't really need a lot of food. You'd only have one good meal, and that would be at night time, after you'd had your wash and clean, dry clothing. Your batman or your company cook would... we all did our individual cooking. My batman used to be a very good cook, and he would... we would have the African rations 9 times out of 10, which was rice and bully beef, heated up on a small little fire, and sometimes from the airdrop you could have beer, you could have eggs, you could have get special rations if required, and some, if you'd had a successful patrol, you might for breakfast have a fried egg. But it was the wetness.
What about the animal life? Did that cause you any problems, or the insect life?
Yes, we saw quite a lot of animal life in one of our earlier patrols in Johor, in Kluang. Going along, it was Sandy McLean in front of me. He was armed with a shotgun. Platoon commanders preferred the shotgun. I usually had a carbine. And we heard this growl from right from the track that we were making, and there, literally 5 yards away, was a tigress with 3 young. Luckily, we all froze. We looked at each other, Sandy and I, and the askari behind and in front, and she looked at us and then slowly turned away and walked on, and we went on. That was the closest we got to that sort of thing. You came across snakes quite a lot, and they were there. You circle round them and didn't do anything further with them. Animal life, monkeys, you would hear them. Very interesting, as a matter of fact. You didn't see them a lot, but you would hear them calling. Bird life was very nice, very lovely. Once you chopped down, we did a lot of making our own DZs sometimes when we were thick in the far out in the jungle. The only way out was to be airlifted out, and you would have to cut your own DZ. The troops would cut it with their pangas, and this little hole out in the deep jungle was where you were evacuated from by the helicopters. And once you did that, you could see a little bit further, and you could see quite a lot of bird life when you were standing on the edge of this little DZ.
What did the gorillas look like?
They were, on the whole, on the small side, wiry, thin. They were not living very well in those days. They were immensely tough. They would carry heavy loads and would go for miles, or so it seemed to us. As I said, 95% of them were Chinese. They seemed to get darker living in the jungle, that no fresh air, no sunlight, and their bodies would go a darker yellow than the normal Asian Chinese colour that one is used to. Smell, you could smell them. If you got a contact, and they'd passed along in front of you, or just recently, you could smell them, because they were...
Was this an unpleasant smell?
Well, it was a... Yes, I would say so. It was a smell, it was a CT smell. It was not an animal smell, it was just a smell that we all give off. You give off a certain European smell, an African gives off an African smell, and the CTs gave off a CT smell. It wasn't a very nice one, because they were living in the jungle all the time.
Were there women amongst them?
Yes, there were women amongst them. I didn't see any, but there were some, and some were killed.
Would you just see dead? Would you personally just have seen dead gorillas, or did you see live ones?
I saw live ones. I saw this man in black at our very first contact. I didn't see any others in the bush. We had an unsuccessful contact in Operation Rooster when we had an immediate ambush, one of our drills, when we heard noises, not animal noises, and we smelt, and we did immediate contact. But I think that the CTs had seen us and turned around and gone. We didn't see anything except hair movement, but I didn't actually say that was a man, unfortunately.
You were talking about people giving off different smells, but were you, did you adopt as a policy not using things like shaving cream or aftershave lotions and so on, so as not to give yourselves away in the jungle?
Well, I don't think I certainly didn't, and I don't think any of the Europeans would have actually taken shaving cream or after smell in, because it's extra weight that you're carrying on your back. You would simply shave, have a dry shave, or in one time when I went in for quite a long time with my company, I wasn't very popular with the CO when I came out because I hadn't shaved at all. But normally we have a shave every morning, but I decided I'd like to see what my beard would come out looking like, so I didn't shave for about 5 weeks.
So you got it ticking off there.
No. Well, it wasn't very popular.
Did you ever see any surrendered guerrillas?
Yes. Oh, yes, quite a lot. That had a special branch at special branch headquarters, or the police station, the local police station, where they were. As I said, that's where I got the impression of how small they were and how dark they were. They look pretty dejected. The Malayan police and special branch were very good in that they turned a lot of these CTs round after giving them a good time in a holiday camp and giving them extra money and paying them quite a lot in a lot of cases, the head boys. And that is where they got quite a lot of their hard information from. In fact, one or two CTs came back into the bush with us, into the jungle with us, and led patrols. But not with my company. No, at least not when I was with my company.
Would they voluntarily give information once they'd surrendered?
After a time, yeah. In some cases, voluntary, yes. Straight away, I think the reaction of being captured or being shot at or being wounded and brought back to civilization, shall we say, yes, they would give immediate information. But of course, it was the in-depth debriefing that the special branch were really after.
Did you have much contact with the Aborigines?
Yes, I did. I had Operation Rooster. We went through this Aboriginal area, very nice, the Cameron Highlands. It was right up on the mountains, lovely, cool. And there were a large village that we went through. They were very friendly, very helpful. They showed us the way up, an easy way up the mountainside where the CTs used to go, they said. And we started up there and then branched into along the, there was a, it was a valley, one of the valleys in the Cameron Highlands. We went up this path and then branched and went along through the jungle along the side of the valley, all for about 4 or 5 miles, and on the other side was C Company, so that we had company on either side of this long valley of about 10 miles, I suppose, and we operated on either side.
Did you like the Aborigines or not?
Yes, very nice people. As I said, they were very friendly, very helpful. Always greeted us when we saw them. And one day they came up. They knew where we were, wherever we were. One day they came up for a little talk, and we would give them cigarettes and that sort of thing, and ask them questions as best as we could.
Do you think they would have been just as friendly to the guerrillas?
Yes, I do.
When was it that you left Malaya?
Natalin left Malaya in March 1956, if I remember.
Had you just operated in those two areas?
We operated in, those are the two states we operated in, Kluang, Kluang, yes, sorry, I'm getting mixed up. we operated in Pahang, in which Kuala Lipis was, and we then went down to Mentakab and Raub, where we operated with one of the Malay regiments. But that was all in this state of Pahang. After we'd been there for about a year, 8 or 9 months, we then moved down to our last operational area, which was in Johor.
What did you think of the Malay Regiment people?
My company did quite a number of joint operations with the Malay Regiment. In our second sort of posting area in Pahang State, we got on very well with them. They, my impression of them was that they were very good. They knew what they were doing. They obviously knew the country, but I got the feeling that, like everywhere else, they'd had a long time at it. They lived in the country. They were operating in their own country, and they were getting slightly tired, and I wouldn't say blasé about it, but they were not as keen as we were, because we knew we were only going to be there for a certain limited time and then out, go home, whilst these poor Malay regiment chaps were at it all the time, really. Obviously they went on leave and that sort of thing, and but probably moved around and in the various states where they were not so many CTs operating on the white areas, but nevertheless they were there, and they had to. I think they were having an effect on their morale and their military efficiency.
Did the morale of your own troops decline during the period you were there?
No, it was always very high at all times.
Were you sorry to leave Malaya or glad to get out?
I personally, and I think a lot of Europeans and the wives were sorry. I thought it was a lovely country. It had, apart from the humidity of the climate, it had a very nice climate. The people were extremely friendly, Chinese and Malays, Malay. I thoroughly enjoyed it. The married families that we took, the Europeans were allowed to take their wives and families, and those of us who were married, they were stationed in Penang Island, so that when I went on leave, one would go to Penang. And that was, again, a lovely island. You could go up into the mountain there, and you'd be in a cool, different climate altogether. But then you had your swimming, you had it down on the coast, and I think the families enjoyed it.
How much contact did you have with the white people in Malaya?
Well, that varied. Most of the white people that we came in contact were, by the nature of our operations, were government officials and government servants, police, special branch, that sort of thing. Those areas that we did operate in, and this is more in the tobacco, the rubber plantation areas, we met a number of planters there and in their clubs. We got on extremely well with them. We were always made honorary members of whatever local club happened to be in the area, where we were entertained by them, and we would go many times to their houses for dinner or drinks, sundowner parties.
How did you get home to East Africa?
The battalion finished in March 1956. We moved down to Singapore. We stayed a couple of days there. Naturally, we had a final parade when General Bourne, who was GOC at the time, flew in to our camp by helicopter and took the march past of the battalion. And then within 2 days after that, we were on the troop ship the whole of the battalion this time, with wives and families, back to Beira, and from Beira we took the train through Mozambique, southern Rhodesia, to Bulawayo, and then up north, back to northern Rhodesia, and arrived at Lusaka.